Nacholand Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calciolamb podcast. So we have a fun episode coming up today. There was an exciting weekend of games in Serie A, so we'll name our winners and losers of the weekend. We have two outstanding guests. I definitely wanted to talk about Fiorentina, the coaching change that they recently went through. So we brought in our friend Giancarlo Rinaldi from Football Italia to talk about Fiorentina. You'll hear that towards the top of the podcast. And then we have another friend from Football Italia, Richard Hall, who you'll hear at the end of the podcast. We went around the league, focused more on the top teams, but definitely touch base also on the relegation race. But before we get to all that, I am joined by the producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. And I knew today I had a good topic, so last night I texted you just so you could get ready. So I've been thinking a lot about Zlatan and Ronaldo. I'm not surprised. I said it all along. Pirlo Juve would look very different with Ronaldo back. Of course, Zlatan continues to put in unbelievable performances. Milan wins at Napoli. Now he'll be out for a few weeks, so we'll get a sense of how valuable it is. So I was thinking mainly about comparing these two, thinking who's more valuable to their team. But then I was like, wait a second. Lukaku absolutely deserves to be in the mix because he's been carrying Inter. So let me ask you this, Alex. I'm assuming the answer is Ibrahimovic, that he's the most valuable for a couple of reasons. But how close do you think Ronaldo and Lukaku are to him as far as value that they bring to their team?
Yeah, I think it's closer than maybe some would think just because Zlatan right now is rightfully stealing all the headlines. I mean, it just keeps getting more ridiculous. We keep thinking, well, at this point, I hope people aren't thinking he's going to stop this season. Or just overall this season, yeah, he might have some bad games, but clearly he still has it. So we shouldn't be surprised week to week at this point that he's playing well. But just overall in a vacuum, it is getting more ridiculous and more ridiculous because he's just flat out playing better than 23-year-olds and he's 39. So he's rightfully stealing all the headlines and he's the type of character that's pretty good at that anyway. So what I find really interesting to really answer this question factually, it isn't the correct word because it is still a little bit based on opinion, but you can get nerdy and you can kind of see how the teams are doing when the players are on the pitch and not on the pitch. So Ronaldo has the best plus minus per 90 out of the three, just meaning that when he's on the pitch, yep, Juventus are doing quite well. They're winning by 2 goals or so. Don't quote me on the stat, but he had a higher plus minus when he's on the pitch than those two players. But some of that can also be because, well, he's been out a little bit. So then when he is out there, yep, he's scoring some goals. So it kind of makes sense. So smaller sample sizes, larger sample sizes, it can kind of mess up that stat this early in the season. And we know overall Zlatan is just beasting and he's carrying Milan. So I wouldn't put Ronaldo above Zlatan just because of that one stat. And then XG, David, which is kind of the trendy stat these days, expected goals for the actual players. Well, this is a fun one. Zlatan leads the league with 7.6, then Lukaku with 6.3, and then Ronaldo with 5.5. So that's an accumulation, obviously, that is a stat that adds up over time. So per 90, though, it's still Zlatan, Lukaku, and Ronaldo, if you want to go per 90. So that's pretty telling. So I'm going to say, David, it's actually quite close because we know how important Lukaku is to Inter. I will say the order for me is actually Zlatan, Ronaldo, Lukaku. But God, it feels wrong putting Lukaku third.
Yeah.
Because
it does.
He's just everything. I'm not saying he's everything to Inter, but I view him as a lot to Inter because we know, and I'm sure many do, but because we know Conte can handle coaching the defensive side of the game. Like, we know Conte, if he had to go into a game, David, saying, I need the clean sheet, we know he'd be one of the most likely managers to figure out a way to get a clean sheet. But, okay, you need great players to go win you games, though. And that's what Lukaku does for him. So, it feels awful putting him third. Maybe I have to just put him with Ronaldo tied for second and just make it clear that they're right behind Zlatan, because all three of those players right now, I mean, you do see when they're not on the pitch, it's not the same team. It's not the same team dangerous-wise. It's not the same team vibe-wise. There's an essence. There's an aura. There's a comfortability. Not a complacency, I don't think. I think there's a comfortability when those players are out there for their teammates. I think it gets all of them going. So, wow. Like I said, we can dive into the stats even deeper. I'm not going to get nerdy with like really foreign stats that people haven't heard of, but they back it up. They back it up that these players are so vital to their team when they're on the pitch, and then conversely, when they're not on the pitch. So, yeah, I'm just going to have to say it's Zlatan, because he gets it for default just based on what he's doing, where Milan is. But we know that we wouldn't be predicting Juve. Like, I wouldn't be predicting Juve to win the league if it wasn't for Ronaldo. So I have to take that into account. And he's still really, really damn good. And then Lukaku, like I said, it feels awful to even put him third, so I won't. I'll say it's Zlatan and then Ronaldo and Lukaku tied. I'm a coward, David. That's exactly what I'm going to do. So there's my answer. What about you?
Yeah, and I like your thought process. I thought the stats complemented what you had to say pretty well. So there's a lot to unpack here. Like, the word valuable is very interesting in and of itself. It's not necessarily best. It's who brings the most to the team. And I just ask myself, okay, if I take away that player from that team and replace him, say, with any other that we've discussed, what happens? And I think a lot of it is also situational on the team. Obviously, when Ibrahimovic arrived at Milan, they were kind of in a similar situation to Juve before Conte arrived. They really needed that one guy who was going to turn things around, and he did it. So Ibrahimovic probably, I think beyond probably, was in the situation where he could make the biggest impact. Like, Lukaku joined Inter, who was back in the Champions League. He replaced Icardi. Obviously turned out to be a massive upgrade on Icardi. I think even the most optimistic person on Lukaku probably couldn't have expected that it'd be quite such a step up there. And Ronaldo, look, you know, I think the hardest thing to do in sports is to go from very, very good to great. And I think Ronaldo is really the type of player that does that. Now, could you say Ibrahimovic and Lukaku could have done the same at Juve? Possible. I'm not sure they could carry them to that extent in the Champions League. I know a lot of people are like, oh, you know, Juve got Ronaldo for the Champions League. It's like, well, he actually has come through. He scored all their goals past the group stage 2 years in a row. And he's actually turned out to be decisive in Serie A for them, which probably says more about Juve not living up to expectation than Ronaldo's impact. So I think it's super close. And I think on the surface, and you're right, everyone would just say Zlatan, because he's the results are great. The impact he's had on his teammates is undeniable. But you also make a good point. Like, Inter's whole game plan is really just get the ball to Lukaku and have him make something happen. And I think right now, Inter, we've talked a lot about them, like, mentality-wise, they just don't really seem to be there. Something is really off. And it feels like Lukaku is really carrying him. And I think it's also his personality and the way he is as a person that he's making it happen. So in a way, I think they are all exactly at the team where they need to be to bring the value necessary. Like, Milan needed a transformational character to get Zlatan. Inter needed someone who was an upgrade on Icardi, who would still give you that production, but would bring more to the table. And he did that. And Juve needed really someone to elevate them in the Champions League, and also ended up being pretty decisive in Serie A. So again, I think what Ronaldo does maybe is the hardest, but it's not necessarily the most value. So I'm going to go Zlatan, Lukaku, Ronaldo, and I don't feel good about it, because I've said it all along that everyone would look at Juve and Pirlo very differently with Ronaldo in the lineup, and that's exactly what happened. So, interesting discussion. I'd be curious to hear what our listeners think is the rank invaluable. So tweet at us. Very curious to get your take. And next up, we really wanted to talk about Fiorentina. I'm very excited to welcome my friend Giancarlo Rinaldi. We had a fun discussion on them. So check this out. So I'm very excited to be joined by my good friend Giancarlo Rinaldi. We were joking around before we started recording that I always seem to bring him on when things aren't going great at Fiorentina. So I promise whenever things are really good for Fiorentina, Giancarlo will be back. For those of you not familiar with him, he has one of the best Scottish accents we've had on Calcioland, which is saying a lot. He is one of my favorite writers on Football Italia. A lot of great content there looking at the current game. But, you know, Christmas is coming. Black Friday week is coming. If you have a Calcio fan in your life that, you know, will appreciate a good book, Giancarlo has some great books. The 20 Great Italian Games available on Amazon, and I'll tweet the link when we post the episode. So with that intro out of the way, my friend Giancarlo, bentornato to Calcioland. Always a real pleasure to chat with you, my friend.
Yes, it's always, I was laughing to myself here. We could be waiting a long time to speak again. If you're waiting for a good time for Fiorentina, I've got an appointment free in 5 years' time.
Okay. Hopefully it won't be quite that bad. So let's start here, Giancarlo. Instead of talking about Prandelli, let's take it a step back, because I think really a lot of what happened here, and almost everyone saw it coming, was the decision to bring back Iachini, which I think, to Comiso's credit, you know, he explained what he saw that Iachini brought to the table when he replaced Montella, and that he believes in meritocracy, all that. So I thought Comiso gave a pretty good answer, but the results just haven't been there. So let's go back to when Fiorentina brought back Iachini. How surprised were you that they went with that?
I wasn't that surprised, only because football teaches you that when an interim boss does quite well, they quite often get a longer term appointment. The only thing with that history also teaches us is that quite often the caretaker position, once it becomes permanent, tends to not be such a great solution. And unfortunately, that was the case here. You know, where he did buck things up initially, and you know, there was a fighting spirit, which, I mean, I think I said to yourself, that was what Iachini was renowned for as a player, and he did transmit some of that to the team. But unfortunately, it was pretty evident from quite early on that they were just going nowhere tactically. And I mean, that's not entirely his fault. That, you know, I think a bit some of the acquisitions maybe were square pegs for round holes, but he did seem to be quite hard-headed in carrying on playing players out of position, or out of their favoured position anyway. And it just more and more, the play got more and more dull, it got more and more sort of stilted, and, you know, eventually I think the writing was on the wall that the hat had to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you there. So let's talk about Prandelli. Look, obviously, and Comiso talked about how expensive it would have been to hire Sarri, and I think the same applies to Spalletti, to be honest. But how surprised were you that they brought back Prandelli, who to me, in my mind, is a little bit similar to Montella in the sense that it seems one of the main reasons for bringing him back was how well he had done at Fiorentina in the past. So what did you make of the decision of zeroing in on Prandelli?
Well, again, you know, it's one of these things which, you know, you watch football long enough, then nothing really surprises you. But I think there's always a temptation, if you can't maybe get an exciting new name, to go back and get an exciting old name, somebody who did well previously. But again, you know, there is a danger in that, because, you know, I think I've used this term before, the minestra riscaldata, the Italian reheated soup. It's not always, it's not used in a complimentary sense.
No.
Usually it's usually going back over old ground. And, you know, it's difficult to repeat the success you've had, both as a player and as a manager, because times move on, circumstances change. You know, the crop of players that you had then, you don't have now. And it's difficult to repeat it. So, but having said all of that, I don't think you'll find many people in Florence who don't have a lot of affection for Cesare Prandelli. The club band, the manager, have a lot of fondness for one another. And so, although, by and large, if I was writing my rules of football, I would say don't go back and try to recreate what you've done before. You should invent anew. In this case, there's such goodwill and such good feeling towards Prandelli that, you know, nobody could grudge him coming back. And, you know, there was despite the result the weekend, it was an emotional thing, and it was quite sad, really, you know, in these COVID times, that if there had been a crowd in, he would have got some welcome back to Florence. You know, it would have been an emotional time when in his last spell, his wife passed away whilst he was managing Argentina, and that was one of the most emotional times I think I've ever seen in Florence. The greeting that the crowd gave him then, and so, you know, they went through a lot together, and good times as well, where the team played some lovely football under Prandelli as well. So, as I say, although, you know, by and large, if I would say I'm usually against bringing back old glories, just for all the reasons I've outlined, and for how hard and you know how often it kind of spoils their legacy. In this case, I could see, you know, if they couldn't get the big names that they wanted, or if the big names were going to be too expensive or too difficult to get to, it seemed, then, you know, this wasn't a bad compromise. The only problem is that he's still got the same squad of players, and, you know, they didn't look a lot more lively on first evidence against Benevento.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit more about Prandelli. And obviously the Benevento game must have been very disappointing to you, any Fiorentina fan. Don't want to totally overreact to it. It was his first game, and there was the international break and whatnot. But how optimistic are you that Prandelli can start turning this around?
It's going to be a tough job for him. I mean, you look at the squad and you think, well, that, you know, that's a group of players that should be comfortably mid-table anyway. I mean, I'm not overly ambitious for them, but, you know, I think you look player for player and you thought, they should beat Benevento. But, you know, the trouble is that the longer it goes without getting a good result, the more difficult it seems. And I think Fiorentina are caught in this sort of, it's a conundrum that faces quite a lot of Italian teams, that they're in a kind of middle ground where they're not a big gun, so, you know, they can't steamroll their teams, but they're not a minnow either. So, you know, they're expected to play a certain style of football, especially at home, and they're not bad. I mean, I think on the evidence I've seen, they're not bad when they play a bigger side who will come and be expansive and play football and let them play football. But when they come up against a team that you have to unlock, like Benevento, like many teams in Italy, they really struggle. They're very slow. They're very predictable. And I don't know who gives Prandelli the keys to unlock, because we gave one away to Juventus. So there's one man down. We've not seen, unfortunately, much from Jose Callejon, who, you know, we hope will have a big input going ahead. And Frank Ribery is getting older, and injuries have been, you know, it's not been an easy season for him so far, with just little knocks and niggles. So, you know, you start to say, well, who's going to unlock these tight defences, these teams that are more difficult to break down? And then, you know, the biggest problem, I think the biggest headache he's got, is who's going to stick the ball in the net. Because although there's a choice of strikers, there's Dusan Vlahovic, there's Christian Kwame, there's Patrick Cutrone, but I don't think anybody at Fiorentina has decided who's the best of the three, and you know who's going to get the faith going forward to become the goal scorer. So, and he's got a lot of headaches, you know, and it's just as well he loves the club, because he's going to have a lot of work to do. As I say, there's potential there to make a team that's certainly more entertaining, and you know, and can get a few results, but there's not a lot of time to do it, because they're down in a precarious position, and it would only take another couple of weeks of not getting a win for it to become a really big issue for them. I mean, I believe they can. I think they can, but you know, I've seen these situations before where you get a squad of players who you think should be comfortably good enough to stay afloat, and just, you know, for one reason and another, things don't work out. And as you say, you don't want to overreact to one game, but there weren't a lot of leaders out on the park at the weekend, and you know, you need your players, your key men, to stand up and be counted and really, you know, really help to dig a team out of that kind of situation. So I'm reasonably optimistic, but I'm not underestimating the scale of the task ahead, because they have looked very lacklustre, and they've looked very vulnerable to, as I say, to playing these sides who, you know, are maybe a more limited resources, but have a set game plan. Whereas Fiorentina, for one reason or another, have chopped and changed their game plan every single week nearly this season. You know, that for one reason or another, as I say, it's going to be an odd season anyway, because of injuries, because of illnesses, but and no crowds as well. But you know, nonetheless, they've tinkered about with the team a lot, the formation, the style, the tactics, and to not a lot of effect so far. So you know, it is a worry, and there are definitely alarm bells ringing there, because I've seen them get relegated before, and there's some similarities certainly to go back to the times when they had sort of Stefan Effenberg and Brian,
yeah.
And they looked like they should be. They look like they should be well too strong to go down. So he needs to give it. I think he's, you know, he's more than capable of giving the team the shake it needs. But then I do think there's a sort of longer term issue with Fiorentina about sort of forward planning that hasn't gone on for a long time, and there hasn't really been a, you know, it's all well and good to have these lovely projects for the Centro Sportivo, but
yeah.
Fans want success on the pitch as well, so they have to. The two things have to run side by side. I mean, you need the infrastructure, you need the stadium, you need the money coming in. Obviously, these revenue streams are important, but you know, you also need a kind of project, a vision of how the team's going to go, and you need to put a coach in place who you're going to have faith in, and you're going to say he's our man for 5 years, and you know, whatever happens, we won't be shaken in our confidence. And I don't think, you know, that project hasn't really started yet, and it needs to start sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I agree, and I'm going to say that it wouldn't shock me at all if Iacchini returns at some point, especially if things don't improve and they are really in the race to avoid relegation. It wouldn't shock me at all if he comes back. But let's talk about the players a little bit. So I'm going to ask you to pick one player who surprised you in a positive way this season. Maybe that's going to be a little bit harder than picking a player who's disappointed you so far the most.
Well, you know, in the opening weeks of the season, which I can imagine probably any Fiorentina fans listening might start throwing things at their whatever they're listening through. But in the opening weeks of the season, I actually thought that Cristiano Biraghi had surprised me positively in his return, because, you know, we lost him to Inter. He was kind of thrown away again by Inter. Nobody wanted him really, and yet he came back. And in the opening games, he was setting up goals. He was actually getting forward, and you know, he does hit a good cross. He was reminding me a bit of back in the day, Manuel Pascual getting forward and getting the ball into the box. But as the team, unfortunately, has sort of declined, so have his performances. And you know, certainly at the weekend, it was not one of his more memorable displays for Fiorentina, that's for sure. But I think, I mean, the fact that I'm picking out his name maybe tells you that, you know, there's nothing much else for me to say, because I mean, really, you know, the only other, I mean, the classiest performer's probably been Gaetano Castrovilli again, but that's not surprising me, and even he in recent games has looked a bit like he's trying to win the game by himself. He's trying to do all the fancy flicks and tricks that were coming off for him previously, and you know, they're just not happening, and especially when the team's playing such slow and pedantic pedestrian football, it's difficult. You know, you make a fancy move at pace, you'll get past someone, but you do it slowly and it doesn't matter, you can get past them, but they'll probably get back and tackle you again. So you know, the positive surprises, sadly, have been few and far between. I mean, we knew we had a good goalkeeper in Drongowski, and he's shown that definitely again this season.
Yeah, he's excellent.
There are bright spots, but you know, in terms of positive surprises, I'm afraid there's not been too many of those at all. When it comes to disappointment,
yeah, we could be on for a while. You can pick just one, Giancarlo. Just
the list is a bit longer. I would say, and it pains me to say it, but I would say that Amrabat probably been my biggest disappointment.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's because that's not because he's been the worst player in the team, because you know, there's plenty of competition for that, and he's far from that. But it was just from what I'd seen of him. And from the reputation that he came with, his level of performance has been way below what was expected. Now, the one thing I would say is that, you know, people who watched him more than I did last season say he's being played out of position. He's being asked to do things that are not really, you know, what his role should be. And he's also playing in a terrible team as well. So,
yeah,
you know, there are a lot of extenuated circumstances, but nonetheless, you know, if you were saying who's been the biggest disappointment, who came with this, sort of, you know, just the expectation was big with him. We saw the show reels. We thought that there was more. And I believe there's a lot more to come from him. And I still have faith that he can turn it around. But there's no doubt that, you know, from the player that kind of never gave the ball away, it's unfortunate that we seem to have, it's like a magic wand in reverse that Fiorentina have got at the moment. They seem to take these players who look amazing with other teams. I mean, Paul Lirola was another one that we brought in from Sassuolo, and he was looking like a great marauding fullback that we hadn't had for a long time, and yet, you know, his level of contribution has been disappointing. Christian Kwame as well was a hot prospect until the Fiorentina magic touch got to him, and now he can't, you know, he can hardly control a ball anymore. It's ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, in a disappointing season, nonetheless, I think the expectation level, the level of investment in Amrabat was quite high, and the return so far has been pretty low.
I think you picked the two players I would have picked. Well, Biraghi, absolutely a positive surprise. Also hard to get good left backs, and he's been better than he was at Inter. I agree. And Amrabat is a very fair shout. You also have to wonder, you know, if maybe Verona is a little bit like Atalanta, Juric, pretty similar to Gasperini, if maybe those players just end up looking much better there than elsewhere. Kumbula isn't off to a fantastic start at Roma either, but I think Amrabat is definitely a fair shout. So I want to ask you about Chiesa, who obviously has been at Juve and had a huge sample size. I have to say, I think he's done pretty well. I know the red cards and the goal against Barcelona, some of the things that stand out, but I think he's been pretty good. So what do you make of Chiesa so far at Juve, and do you eventually see him becoming someone that Juve is going to build their next cycle around, like he'll be one of their key players?
I think he can be. I mean, I think he, you know, he shouldn't take too much from these early games where the voodoo dolls that we've built in Florence are obviously still having their effect, or, you know, giving him his red card and his own goals and everything. I think there are a lot of people in Florence were laughing up their sleeves at that. But once he establishes himself, assuming he can establish himself, which, you know, that's the hardest task. You can go and ask Bernardeschi if he needs any advice about that. That, you know, if he can make himself a part of that team, then I think he can be a big player. And, you know, Juve's obviously got a policy now to try to drive down the age profile of the team, because, you know, they were
old.
They were La Vecchia Signora and Vecchi Giocatori as well. You know, they were old in nickname and in the flesh as well. You know. But they've definitely gone down a route of rejuvenation, and you know, that's been done before at Juve. We've seen that many times, many cycles. You have to be kind of brave and start again. And you know, they looked around, I think, and wanted some of the best Italian talent as well. And so, you know, I think they've got, you know, if people can. Not everyone is a Chiesa fan, not everyone thinks he's, but to me, they've got one of the best youngish Italian talents that's there. So, you know, he definitely can be a building block for the future for them. He's got talent, he's got a good attitude, although, as I say, in Florence, they didn't appreciate it so much now. But, you know, I think he's got a lot of the elements that you need. As you say, it's a small sample size, and the hardest part at Juve is, as a lot of players who've gone from Fiorentina to Juventus have found, is just getting game time. You know, I think there was I remember a cartoon a few years ago when it was, I think it was maybe Neto and Cuadrado that were sitting next to one another on the Juventus bench, and one says to the other, "Oh, I might have a shower at the end of the game anyway." You know, because they knew they weren't going to get any game time, but they might as well act as if they had. And you know, I think if you look at the Cuadrado story, in the end, that's kind of had a happy ending, because he's gone round the houses and ended up being quite an important player for Juventus one way and another. And so, you know, I think you know, there's a determination needed that, you know, Bernardeschi still struggling with that, but I think that Chiesa can deliver. It's just it's a question of seizing your chance when you get it, and obviously, you know, in Florence, Fiorentina, you're going to be, you know, especially in the squad that we had at the time, he's going to be a first choice every week. That's not going to happen in Turin. He's going to have to make himself indispensable, and there's a lot of big names, you know, in the running for a place in the starting 11. He is flexible, but then I think we've said this before, that can be a downside as well as an upside, because although it can get you into a team because you can play a number of positions, it can also make a manager pick you less because you don't specialise, so he doesn't see you as being outstanding in any one role. You know, you end up kind of, that certainly was a problem for Bernardeschi in his time in Florence, was that, you know, he kind of played everywhere for the manager, and that was great, but it did sort of stop his development, I think, in what he might have seen as his kind of prime position. And so I think Chiesa got to be careful of that as well. He wants to be, to my mind anyway, you want Chiesa in the final third, taking on a fullback, or maybe taking on a central defender and getting to the byline and pinging you in crosses. You know, I think that's where you want him to be. So if he can make himself kind of indispensable in that position, although, as I say, Juve do have a fair array of options, then, you know, I still think he can be a big contributor for his club and for his country.
Absolutely. Okay, so Giancarlo, I know it's been downbeat for Fiorentina. I promise to bring you back in better circumstances. But tell us, if you had to pick one thing that you think should give hope to Fiorentina fans, what would it be? Would it be Castrovilli, the investment Comiso has made into the club, or is there something else that stands out to you as a reason for optimism for Fiorentina fans?
I always see the spirit of Fiorentina, the spirit of Florence, because remember this is a team that's been down in Cidue, it's been down in the fourth tier of Italian football and come back to the top. So this, you know, although it's bad, it's not, you know, most of us can remember when it was a much, much worse situation than this. So I think there's a spirit there, there's a willingness to come back. It needs one or two things to click. It needs maybe Comiso to understand Italy a bit better, to understand the workings of Italian football a bit better. I think it needs, you know, a manager to get as many of the players that are there playing in the right positions and feeling they're sort of pulling in the right direction. And then, you know, hopefully we get fans back into the Stadio Franchi, and it's a much different place for teams to come to when you've got 30,000 mad Florentines inside it than it is just now when it's silent on a Sunday afternoon. So I still, you know, I always try to be a glass half full kind of person, and I think, you know, and I think when you watch football for a long time, you do get a bit more of a sense of perspective, because it's easy now, I think, especially with social media, to lurch from one game to another. And, you know, the moment they have one bad game, they're the worst team you've ever seen in the world, and then they win a game and they're the greatest team you've ever seen. And you know, I think with a bit of perspective, you can look at this squad and this time say, well, it's not the greatest Fiorentina team, but it's far from the worst. And, you know, there are elements there that should give cause for optimism. And, you know, it was only not much more than 12 months ago that everyone was saying, oh, we're going nowhere under the Della Valle, or they've got the short arms, they called them, because they never spend anything. And, you know, and now we're already, you know, barely a year into his reign, and we're already condemning Comiso. I think you've got to give him a bit more time, and you've got to give the guy a bit of a chance to build for the future. And I think, you know, if we do, and if they, as I say, it's a question of trial and error a lot of the time. You know, not everyone gets it right the first time. In fact, very few clubs do. You know, so, you know, give him a bit of time to find whoever his man, you know, to run the team will be, and I think there can still be good times round the corner for Fiorentina. So, you know, although I wasn't feeling optimistic around about lunchtime on Sunday, it's still, you know, globally, I think the message is that the good times can still come back, and, you know, it just takes a couple of little things to fall into place, and suddenly all the pessimism can be lifted, and I can be back on here discussing the 3-0 win over the Juventus.
There you go. Well, we're definitely bringing you on if that happens, I promise. So everyone, check out Giancarlo's excellent work. As I mentioned, he writes beautifully on Football Italia, not just about Fiorentina or Serie A. And if you are looking for a gift for the Calcio fan in your life, I know they will really appreciate the book, The 20 Great Italian Games, and I'll tweet the link out. So, Giancarlo, thank you so much for joining me, my friend. Always a real pleasure to chat with you.
Always, always a pleasure.
All right, good stuff. I say it often on the podcast, and it's never an insult, but I do forget about Fiorentina, and then I feel bad about that, so it's really nice to hear about Fiorentina. All right, so let's
you forget about Fiorentina working with me. You know we love zinging them a little bit.
Yeah, that is true. Can't deny that. All right, so let's move on to winners and losers, where we review the weekend that was. David, let's start off with our winners.
Okay, Alex, and I'm going to make a bold proclamation. This was the weekend where De Ligt took the crown for best defender in Serie A, and he will not let it go. Granted, I know Cagliari didn't have Nandez, so I'm not going to go totally crazy on that game, but De Ligt was sensational. I loved after the game. You heard him talk in very, very good Italian. I just love everything about this guy. So I'm going to say now, with the way Koulibaly has been struggling, De Vrij hasn't been himself, Kjaer at Milan's been superb. Don't get me wrong. I think performance-wise, he's definitely up there. I think it's hard to top what he's done. But I think De Ligt right now has shown that he's the best defender in Serie A. And I think this is the year where all these Twitter things, people trying to disparage him, that's going to end. I think universally people are going to see how good he is. And then the other is Ronaldo. We talked about his impact at the top. He now has 8 goals in 5 games. Juve just looks very different when he's on the pitch. Bernardeschi also had a good game. I have to say, Alex, you have to feel great about picking Juve for the Scudetto after this weekend. I'm at the point where I'd be really pretty surprised if Juve don't win the title. And we got into it with Richard Hall. I actually think this has the potential to be one of the best Juves we've had in these past 10 years. Then we had Lazio, who in a match who I titled really shows that we are in the ultimate the show must go on season. Absolutely brutal weather. It was like a big puddle in that game. But Lazio do beat Crotone. Immobile scores. Superb pass by Parolo on the first goal. Really, really beautiful. Big win for Lazio. I do want to shout out on Crotone. We've mentioned him a few times. This offensive player, Messias, really, really exciting player. Crotone just signed him to a big extension. That's just to raise his value to be sold. I could see Messias on Atalanta and Sassuolo and be an absolute badass next season. So definitely check him out. Then we had Atalanta, and then we had Spezia hosting Atalanta. Very intriguing game because I think a lot of people were tuning in to watch Atalanta, and you end up being very impressed by the way Spezia played. Their manager, Italiano, we've praised them a lot. I thought they did a great job against Gasperini. A couple of players stood out to me. The defender, Erlich, on Spezia. Superb game on Duvan Zapata. And their goalkeeper, Provedel, was very good as well. Then on Sunday, we had Benevento, who win at Fiorentina. Improta scores his first goal in Serie A. I thought Glick was superb on defense. I really like Benevento, just a very solid team. Nowhere near as good as Verona last year, but it's going to be a pretty similar trajectory, in my opinion. And then if you know me, you know that the game I had circled this weekend, even more than Napoli-Milan, was Verona Sassuolo, which to me is the ultimate game. If you are a calcio hipster, you have Juric, who's a Gasperini disciple. You have our man De Zerbi, who is now looking like Sarri 2.0. Great game. Look, I thought Sassuolo were pretty lucky because Verona hit between bars and crossbar post 4 times. But as they say in Italy, la fortuna aiuta gli audaci. Luck goes to those that are brave. So Sassuolo now 3 clean sheets in a row. I would have never predicted that going into the season. Their goalkeeper, Consigli, has been sensational. We have now Berardi already 4 goals, 3 assists. Boga had a nice goal. And remember, Sassuolo were briefly in first place, and Boga missed about half the season so far. So great performance for them. On Verona, another shout-out to Zaccagni, a player we've mentioned a lot in this segment. Then we had Roma's convincing win against Parma. I've been really wanting to watch Roma, but they're really on at times when there's other games. So I watched just a little bit of this one, but Mkhitaryan has now 5 goals in 2 games. Villar, another signing that they had last season, has been playing very well. And their 2 wing backs, Spinazzola and Karsdorp, really an intriguing duo. If these guys can stay healthy, definitely some to watch. And Borja Mayoral scores his first goal in Serie A. Definitely Roma, very underrated. We're going to cover them more on the podcast because I want to learn more about them. And a big shout out to manager Fonseca, who's doing a great job. Then we had Inter's comeback win against Torino, which was reminiscent of their first match against Fiorentina of the season. Lukaku with two goals. On Torino, look, I thought they played pretty well. Zaza scored against his man Conte. He replaced Belotti, who missed the game with an injury right before the game. And a player to watch on Torino, this right wing back, a single, definitely a player to watch. Then we had Bologna winning away at Sampdoria, a game winner by Orsolini, who had gotten off the rough start to the season. And then we had Udinese, a very important 3 points in the race to avoid relegation against Genoa. De Paul is definitely the best player in the lower table, I would say, this season. He had the goal here. And then Milan's remarkable win against Napoli. Obviously, Zlatan is the headline. He's the oldest player to get to 10 goals after just 8 matches, and he did it in 6 games. That's how good he's been. I thought Donnarumma, who was born right outside Napoli at Castellammare di Stabia, had a great game, and Donnarumma has become, well, not become, he's been great for a long time. We've been praising him for a while. Also, Chiar, another really good game. Frank Kessie won the duel against Bakayoko, and Theo Hernandez with another great game. I've said it all along. If Milan could beat Napoli, I would take them seriously for the Scudetto. So I am. Let's see what happens with Zlatan missing a few weeks. But this Milan team does remind me a little bit of Conte's Juve and how things are evolving. Again, I think Juve after this weekend, in my mind, are considerable favorites, but I definitely put Milan in the mix. So those are our winners, Alex.
Mm. All right. Congrats to them. Big congrats. And okay, now for the losers.
All right. So we have a few. So Atalanta, who drew at Spezia, I think, you know, if you wanted to be a cynical person, you would say that Atalanta are probably distracted by the Champions League, more interested with those games, and maybe they're getting bored with Serie A. Maybe there is something to that. Their game against Spezia was just not their usual self. Then we had Prandelli lose his debut against Benevento. I'm going to go ahead and say it. It really would not surprise me if Iacchini comes back after Christmas, just because he's much more used to the race to avoid relegation. Then we had Parma lose 3-0 to Roma. I think the best silver lining for Parma is their former manager, D'Aversa, is still available. Had another Serie A team hired him, Parma wouldn't have been able to bring him back. You can only coach one Serie A team a season. So I think the fact that D'Aversa is there available is a big opportunity for Parma. But then I know their president Kraus last night tweeted that they're moving away from the 3-5-2 and they're going to start attacking more. I hate to say that, to me, that sounds like a recipe for disaster in the race to avoid relegation in Serie A. If I were Parma, I'd bring back D'Aversa right now and try to get some veterans in the January transfer window. I know they have a lot of exciting prospects, but this will not be easy, this race to avoid relegation. Actually, I think will be more brutal than usual. Speaking of that, Genoa lose 3 in a row. They've been definitely in trouble. Maran is on the hot seat. Then we had Inter, who I have to say, Hakimi, who was off to a great, great start. He's been a little bit shaky recently. Also, Ashley Young. The Inter struggled on the wings in this match. And then Napoli, look, I think the government here in the U.S. suggesting people don't travel for Thanksgiving is going to be more effective than Koulibaly trying to stop Ibrahimovic on Sunday. Hate to pick on him too much. Zlatan's great, of course, but, you know, definitely Koulibaly is, there's definitely not the same player he was about a year and a half ago. Also, Di Lorenzo had a rough game for Napoli. And I want to close on Lazio's plane. We had them in the winners for the game that they won. But Lazio's plane, if you guys remember, they're in the international break. Luis Alberto made a comment you know, Lazio doesn't have money to pay the players, but they bought this plane. And the first trip on such plane did not go very well. They had an emergency landing. Immobile said he sweated more on that first plane ride than he did on the pitch. Look, in a lot of ways, this feels like symbolism for Lazio's season that, you know, this is what Lotito decided to invest on the plane. You guys know I love Lotito. I like to give him a, you know, I think he is a good president overall, but I did find the plane thing pretty fun. Okay, so before we get to our friend Richard Hall, which all of you will hear, and I think you will very much enjoy that because we had a fun chat going around Serie A. Let's get to our patrons. If you enjoy Calcioland and you want to do something good for society, consider becoming a patron. We support an awesome charity called Insuperabili in Italy. They run football academies for kids with disabilities. It's a cause that is very near and dear to my heart. They're doing great things even for kids in quarantine in Italy. So everything we raise on Patreon, we use it to cover production costs, pay our freelance writers, and there's great articles there, and the rest goes to them. We have Napoli Outsider once a month for patrons, a lot of great stuff. So if you like Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. Okay, I'm very excited to welcome one of our favorite and regular guests, our dear friend Richard Hall. He is, of course, the chief correspondent for Football Italia, the creator of one of our favorite websites, The Gentleman Ultra. And here in the U.S., you can often hear him on Sirius XM. So, Richard, always a real pleasure to chat with you. Thank you for coming back. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Thank you, David. It's always great to be on air and talking Italian football with your good self.
Absolutely. So we're recording this on Monday morning, my time. It was definitely a very interesting weekend in Serie A. So let's start with the defending champs. I have to say that, you know, I didn't really want to pass any judgment too much on the team until Ronaldo and De Ligt came back. They look like a completely different team with those two on board. Do you think it can flip so much that we went from being worried that Juve might not be able to win the title again to this maybe being one of the best teams that we've seen in this Juve cycle in the past 10 years?
It is interesting, and I think there's still a long way to go before we can potentially put that judgment on them. But you mentioned the word cycle, and I think that's kind of what this is. I think with Pirlo now, and the players, the general age of the squad, the players who are becoming important are obviously a lot younger as well. And, you know, they're not just, Juventus are just not about Ronaldo by any shape or form. I think what you're seeing now over the past weeks is the emergence of some players, and like you say, with players returning as well. I think when you look at the effect of like Kulusevski has on that squad, yeah. I think he looks, you know, extremely dangerous, and it gives them another angle in a sense. Obviously, we know Ronaldo and what he's capable of, but you mentioned De Ligt, and when you look at De Ligt and Demiral now, you're thinking that could form part of the, you know, the future of that defense.
Yeah,
and you know. And for me as well, I think you're looking at players like Arthur, who, again, is really starting to dominate. And you can see in the midfield, and you can see that what Pirlo's trying to do, it's coming together. And they're very quick, very aggressive. And I think that it's been a strange start to the season for many teams with other players that have been out with COVID. But now, I mean, Pirlo said before this weekend that the time for this sort of intermediate period, that's over. So he's almost asking to be judged now and say, look, this is my team. This is my stamp on it. And I think, yeah, potentially it's the start of a new cycle with some younger players that potentially could be extremely dangerous. Still games to go, obviously, and, you know, before we can really judge them, I suppose. But it really does look promising for Juventus.
Yeah, no, I definitely see a lot of potential. You know, in years past, recently we've talked about Juve's midfield being the clear weakness. I wouldn't call it a strength, but I would say it's adequate now. Rabiot's also been pretty good. And and I think they're much stronger on the wings, which they've struggled with recently. So well said there. Now let's move on to Inter. And I felt like the game against Torino was a little bit reminiscent of the game against Fiorentina to start the season. Like, Inter kind of looks flat, but then they rally at the end. So what do you make of Inter so far? I originally picked them to win the Scudetto. I have to say, if I could do it over, I would definitely pick Juve right now. How concerned do you think Inter fans should be right now?
I think it's a really difficult moment for Inter at the moment. I think there's quite a few, the fan base probably quite divided, because with Antonio Conte, you know, he made a lot of noise in the summer to back him, to back the players that he wanted to get. And at the start, like you say, even though they scored a lot of goals, but they were conceding a lot as well. I think the frustration for Inter at the moment is that when they do play exactly as Conte wants them to play, they can look extremely dangerous. But the problem is they're just not doing it consistently enough. So if there was an identity to that squad where they continue to play like that maybe but not get results, you could understand it. If there was no identity at all, which we've probably seen in previous teams past with Inter, you could also see the frustration. But it's difficult because you look at that the win and the way they came back against Torino, and you think for the first 60 so minutes, they were diabolical. They didn't look like they were even attempting to do what Conte wants of them. And then they managed to rally. So they have got it in them, and there's the frustration. So the question then goes, you know, this win, is it seen as a really characteristic comeback that's going to kickstart the season? And if you were asking me that, I'd love to say yes, but I don't think it is. You know, you're looking at these performances now. For me, when we talked about Pirlo then, and he just said that, you know, that time's over, Conte's being judged now this season on what he's bringing to the table. And he needs to get that level of performance out of the Inter players that we all know they can do on a consistent basis. Otherwise, for me, it's a fail. And so I think the game, you know, we've got Madrid coming up very soon. That level of performance needs to be there. It needs to be shown that that game was a turnaround. Otherwise, I think that we're going to see probably a very inconsistent Inter throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you. I don't see, in some ways, you could say, oh, we had this great comeback against Torino. This could be the beginning of something. But I'm with you. I didn't interpret it that way. So now let's look to the other side of the city of Milano. Very different for Milan. Now, I have to say, up until this Napoli game, my perspective was, if you're a Milan fan, if you can get fourth place right now, I would sign for it. Just get back to the Champions League. That's a great season because Serie A, there's a lot of good teams at the top. But I have to say, after this game against Napoli, being able to win there, and we know Zlatan, I saw now he's going to miss 2 to 3 weeks. But they've done to start the season without Zlatan, they did well. So what do you make of Milan so far? And with this crazy COVID season, do you see them as a team that can be in the mix for the Scudetto?
I don't see why not. In some respects, just because exactly what we've said, you know, we've got that sort of strange season where players and squad depth, you know, will be tested because of the COVID situation.
Yeah.
With Milan, I've been extremely impressive. I think I've mentioned this before that, you know, we often talk about players improving between seasons and we don't give coaches sometimes enough credit. Pioli, for me, has stepped up another level, really taking on, you know, to play good football. It's attacking football. It feels modern. It doesn't feel turgid. So, you know, we have seen some of his teams play in the past. And he's making the most out of what he's got in his squad. And you're right, I don't think that they, like we talked about with Juventus before, I don't think that Milan are completely, you know, being dragged, kicking and screaming, you know, to the finish line with Zlatan Ibrahimovic doing all the work. And, you know, we've talked about players like Theo Hernandez, who's been absolutely superb. Kessie, he's been brilliant. And Çalhanoğlu, you know, and then there's so many players who you can say, actually, you feel like they're playing in that top level all the time. And it's quite the polar opposite of what you're getting at Inter. You know, we talked, for me, Inter's players, man for man, are vastly superior to Milan. You know, Conte's probably getting 90% out of them 50% of the time, whereas Pioli, with these resources, is really looking like, you know, that Milan are back and people aren't going to want to play them at the moment. And again, it's one of those teams where you can take someone like Zlatan out. You can take any of these players, and they're sort of almost interchangeable. You know, you wouldn't feel too bad if like you had to put Diaz in the squad or Tonali had to fill in. You know, these are all elements which I think Pioli's done a fantastic job.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree with you there. I'm curious to see how Milan does without Zlatan. Again, they had started the season, we had COVID, and they did pretty well. So big test coming, but right now I think Milan fans should be riding high. So let's talk about two teams, one that I would say is definitely exceeding expectations and one that has fallen a little bit short. So the race for top four is going to be interesting. There's a lot of good teams this season. We have Roma, who very quietly off to great start of the season, despite Zeko missing significant time. Mkhitaryan's been absolutely awesome. And Atalanta, on the other hand, who have just not been themselves in recent weeks. In your opinion, between these two teams, who has a better chance of finishing in the top four?
I'm probably going to surprise a few and say Roma here. I just feel that they've, again, they're starting to click. I think with Atalanta, it's unfortunate because they've had, no one sees them as almost like as underdogs anymore. People are very prepared for them. And I think, you know, people are wary of them as well. And I think that with their squad depth, whilst they can interchange a lot of those players in and out, which makes them a fantastic team, I still think just the continued learning to play at the levels in Champions League and learning to play, you know, having to really up their game because teams are trying to look at ways to figure them out, is just causing them a little bit of a problem as well. And, you know, even to the point with, you know, the COVID situation, you know, how bad it was in Bergamo. There's a lot of pressure, almost responsibility on that team. That, you know, when you hear some of the players talk, that they feel that to really deliver for the area. And so I think with Atalanta, it's they're just looking a little tired. Where we talked just then, you mentioned Mkhitaryan. It's another one of these situations where we're seeing quite a lot this season. Players, because of the squad rotation, certain players are being asked to step up. And whether it's the fact that, I don't know, maybe it's, I'd like to do the analysis on whether players like Mkhitaryan suddenly start performing because there's no crowd. I don't know, you know, this, but whatever the reason, you know, there's some of these players, when you look at the likes of, I think Spinazzola has been excellent.
The twos,
they're two, always impressive. And then, like, Mkhitaryan, we mentioned, and they've done it, again, a lot of this without Dzeko. So, for me, Roma just feel like they've got something. Something's clicked in their head at the moment, and they're all on the same page. And it's very similar in a way that I look at Milan. Everybody knows what they're doing. Everyone's sort of signed up for it, and it's really looking like they could go quite far with this thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, they have a strong defense. They have three good young center backs. Their midfield has always been good, and the way Mkhitaryan, Pedro has been a great addition. And they're definitely a very intriguing team, to say the least. And I'm with you. Right now, I would take them over Atalanta, and I don't feel like it's a prisoner of the moment thing to say. So I think there was Napoli this weekend, obviously losing at home to Milan in the fashion that they did was rough. Granted, they were without Osimhen, who's been really excellent for them. I still think Napoli have one of the best squads in Serie A. If I still had to break it down by squad, I would probably say Napoli has the third best squad in Serie A after Juve and Inter. But again, there's a lot of good teams at the top. So where do you see Napoli fitting into this mix at the top with Roma, Atalanta, Milan? Do you see them in the mix for top four? And where do you rank them compared to these other teams?
I think Napoli's the hardest question, and for exactly the reason you've said, because with their squad, especially with, you know, the likes of Osimhen when he's fit, he looks fantastic. They look extremely dangerous. I mean, you look at for me, Lorenzo Insigne now is playing some of the best football of his career. You know, it's quite interesting for me that, you know, you look at the interview after the international break, he mentioned about how happy he actually was. That even the hardcore support where they put a lot of pressure on him at Napoli, that's eased off and he feels as though he can play both. He knows what Gattuso is asking of him. And Maurizio Sarri always used to say of Insigne that if he's happy, that's all you have to make him. He's just happy in his day-to-day and his confidence will grow. And when you see the likes of the levels he's playing at, I think that, you know, you put all everything together, and Napoli should be talked about in title contenders, you know, as kind of title contenders. However, I'd like Gattuso as a coach because I think he's very clear on what he wants to do. I think that when it clicks, they do play a really good brand of football. But again, they just have, and I don't know whether it's because of the amount of games or mental tiredness or whatever it is, but sometimes they just feel like they don't turn up. And I think until Gattuso can, similar to Conte in a way, can get that instilled in his team where they're giving him that percentage of performance week in, week out, then I probably would say, you know, top four is probably the best they're going to look for. But with a squad, they should probably be doing a little better.
Yeah. You know, they just lack that great leader on the pitch. Like last week on the pod, we were talking about what would Napoli look like if they had Zlatan. And you feel like that's exactly what they've been missing. Like Gattuso definitely brings that leadership a little bit, but I think they're really missing it at the player level, because again, their squad is excellent, but they just lack that consistency. And I definitely agree with you there. So while Atalanta maybe isn't as sexy as last season, the team that's kind of taken that mantle is Sassuolo, who were briefly in first place yesterday. I think it's really remarkable what De Zerbi's doing. I think they have three clean sheets in a row, which you would definitely not associate with Sassuolo. They are a very fun team to watch. They also got a little lucky because Verona played well yesterday. But what do you make of Sassuolo? What is their ceiling? And as much as we'd love to see De Zerbi stay there and continue the project, if he was going to go to another top Serie A team, where would you like to see him go?
Sassuolo have been really good fun this season. I mean, De Zerbi quite quickly said, listen, there's no talk of Scudettos here. You know, they realistically, I would, you know, Sassuolo, the way they started here, they could be looking at the Europa League and thinking that should be the bare minimum now because of the way they started. And again, you know, they are playing a very attractive game. Like you say, the defence is looking really good. And I particularly think that Consigli in goal really needs a special shout out because he's looked absolutely excellent this season.
Right.
And, you know, not talked about probably anywhere near as much. And whilst De Zerbi is doing all of this, I would like to probably give a bit of a shout out to Roberto Mancini here as well, because two of the most improved players in the national team for me have been Locatelli and Berardi, as well as Bernardeschi, who you should have probably mentioned with Juve before, and Insigne.
Yeah.
And Berardi's always been one of my biggest frustrations because when he's in form, he's one of the most exciting players for me in Serie A to watch. Love the way he always comes inside. And, you know, and he's got an eye for goal. And the problem is, he's always seemed to lack ambition and even a want to be consistent. But at the moment, he's just playing with a smile on his face and he looks just incredibly dangerous. But the thing is, when you look through that team, when you look at players like Boga, for instance, you know, Ferrari, we look at Lopez, there's so many that you can wax lyrical about. And he seems to manage to get that level of consistency from them week in, week out. And I think that he's got to take enormous credit for that. The problem is, when you say where does he go next, it's a really difficult one. Because when you look at the top two, three clubs, you know, I mean, I wouldn't see Inter, even if they did part ways with Conte, look at him. I don't think that would be the case. It's not sort of, I think with Inter, they'd want to make have a bigger name. So it's difficult. So where do you really start to look at when we just spoke about Roma being very consistent? Lazio got a great coach in Inzaghi. For me, what I would like to see is if he would go to one of the clubs why would you go to them though? I was thinking one of the bigger names, more like a Torino, like a Sampdoria, and really then try and get them back on track in a sense of really pushing them to the next level. So it's quite difficult. It is quite difficult because where he is at Sassuolo at the moment, you know, he's got a good group of players. They're playing exceptionally well. So, yeah, I'm not quite sure on that one. It's a very tough question.
It is. I agree. You're right, because teams like Fiorentina, Torino, then you got to wonder, is it really an upgrade over what Sassuolo has now? which is why I think some teams really missed the boat on De Zerbi. Like last summer, end of last season, was the chance to get him. So now let's talk about some teams that are struggling. So teams that De Zerbi could go and save, but probably is priced out of now. So we have Torino, who Inter came back with. They've had a lot of bad luck, to be fair, because I thought they played pretty well yesterday. And then we have Genoa, who I know you're very fond of, who have been struggling as of late. And Parma, who I was very concerned with to start the season. I didn't think getting rid of Daversa. I like Liverani, but bringing in that manager, and they have a lot of young players. I'm very concerned for Parma. So out of these three, who concerns you most, and who is in most danger of going down to Serie B between Torino, Genoa, and Parma?
Yeah, it's a fun. I always think with Torino, I always like to say I think they'll be okay, because I think when they've got Belotti fit, he's always going to be dangerous. I think, you know, Simone Zaza as well. They can always feel like they can find goals. And I just think there's too much there. I'm not saying that they're too good to go down, but you just feel like, with a bit of a change of look, that team's got enough quality in it to really press on. Genoa unfortunately do concern me this season. I just feel that, you know, that whilst they've not really found their identity as much as I thought they were going to, and they're also not getting any luck. And so it's a frustrating one, because, you know, they need to be taking points off teams around them. You know, I mean, you look at the likes. I thought with Perrin going back there in goal, that would certainly be a big help. But my worry always about Genoa is the same thing, and it's where the goal's going to come from. And you can't look to Goran Pandev to be a serious. I mean, Goran Pandev, what he's doing, the way he took North Macedonia to the final four, great. But you can't be looking on him to be your main threat, in a sense. And when I look at the other players who are going to contribute with goals in the midfield, they don't shout out at me. And I think they miss a serious threat. And that letting Pinamonte, well, they had to get letting go back to Inter, was a huge blow for them. So I am quite worried about Genoa. And Parma as well. Again, Parma just seem to have, it's hard to explain, really. They just seem to have lost their, I don't know, not fight, but last season, they just looked as though they could always be quite dangerous, whether that was because they had Kulusevski, you know, that potentially was it. But again, you look through that squad, and I don't really, I mean, you're looking at the, like, for the goals again. I mean, Inglese, he's not going to get you enough consistently. Jovinho seems to have slowed down, and in the sense of how potent he is. And I don't think Caramo is developing at the rate that they would have liked him to. Thought they might, when they got Cyprian from Nice, I thought they might get a bit of a stronger midfield. But I don't know. Parma, I think certainly for Parma and Genoa, that transfer window is going to be really important. Mainly for the same reason. I just think they both need more of a goal threat.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, I definitely agree. January window is going to be interesting for them. I will say this. The silver lining for Parma is that no one hired Daversa, and you feel that they have in their back pocket the opportunity to bring him back. Say Genoa or someone else had hired him, I'd be very, very worried for Parma. Okay, let's close on Fiorentina. I'm curious to get your take on this. Prandelli not off to a good start yesterday. Lose at home to Benevento. I have to say, I was very surprised by the reception of the Prandelli hire. I thought the reception was very positive. I don't know. It feels like Prandelli has been a long time since he's been able to turn things around. So what do you make of Fiorentina hiring him? And do you think he'll finish the season as Fiorentina's coach?
This is a really difficult one. I was thinking about this morning, and the reason it's so difficult is because Prandelli, you know, yes, he's been away for a while, but he's a very, very good coach, and he has got the ability to do something at Fiorentina, where he probably will be given time because he is such a fan's favourite from way back when. But it's really going to be interesting just to see how he develops. You know, if he's going to come in with fresh ideas or if he's going to go back to his old approach. If he's going to go back to his, the old approach, I think it's possibly a little bit dated now. But we talked about Pioli and how he adapted. You know, because if you'd have said to me, would Pioli be doing this with Milan last season? Well, when he first took over, really, I said absolutely no chance. And he's developed because he's adapted to the modern way of playing football. You know, and I think that Prandelli needs to really prove that, to be fair. It's early days. I mean, the defeat to Benevento, you know, obviously not the best. You know, he moved straight to that 4-2-3-1 formation. So I think with a bit of time, and the next couple of games will certainly be able to see if he is putting his style on there, because he knows the club. He should be able to walk in there. You know, he's got his name, does still hold some authority for what he's done in the past. And it's just for me whether he can really just give the players enough over the next couple of weeks to show that Fiorentina are actually going to do what that squad suggests it should do. You know, because they have got good players. Okay, he's not probably the best ever Fiorentina squad we've seen. But, you know, with Dragowski, I think he's a superb goalkeeper. And, you know, with Castrovilli, yeah. Duncan, you know, Kwame, Vlahovic, there's enough there to really do something. So he's got the tools. He's in a place he knows. So I think he'll need to deliver quite quickly. So it'll be really interesting to watch Fiorentina over the next couple of weeks.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least if Iacchini comes back, just because he's much more used to the race to avoid relegation. But I can't thank you enough for coming on, my friend. Richard always delivers great stuff. So if you want to look more at the past, definitely check out Gentleman Ultra, cover the glory days on Serie A as well as anyone. And if you're curious on Richard's takes on the current Serie A, definitely check him out on Football Italia. Always great stuff. Always wonderful to catch up with you, my friend. Thank you so much for doing this today.
No, anytime, David. Always love coming on here. Thank you very much.